like we've been in John 7 and 8 forever. Probably spent over a month in those two chapters. And today we're going to do all of chapter 9 in one sitting. And that may be hard to believe, but we're gonna get all the way through it today. And really, John chapter 9 is the conclusion of the cycle that started in John 7. So really, John 7, 8, and 9 are all kind of tied together. And then, in 2 weeks, when we get to John chapter 10, we will a new theme will kind of pick up that will lead us all the way through that chapter as well. Okay? So John 9 concludes 7 and 8, and you'll see some of the same. Jesus will make a comment here or there that will be reminiscent of some things that we've looked at in the previous chapters. All right? So here's how we're going to attack this passage today. The passage really breaks down into three parts. You've got verses 1 through 7, which is where Jesus, the disciples, and the man have a conversation and Jesus does a miracle. In verses 8 through 34, there's a bunch of conversation between the man, and you'll be like, well, who is the man? You'll meet him in a minute. The man and some religious officials and even his parents. And then Jesus and the man have this conversation. Have another conversation at the end of the chapter. And so what we're going to do is we'll read the first 7 verses. I'll kind of explain the middle, and then we'll pick up, and we'll read one comment the man makes to some religious officials in verse 30, and then we'll pick up the last conversation between the man and Jesus. Okay, so there's 3 sections. We're going to read the ends and talk about the middle. How to explain it. All right, everybody got it? All right. So here's let's just go ahead and read the first verse. It's on the screen behind me. As he, that's Jesus. Now remember what happened last week. Well, 2 weeks ago, because we talked about that, the adulterous woman passage last week. 2 weeks ago, let's jog our memories. Jesus and the religious officials have been going back and forth, and he says, before Abraham was, I am. And then the last verse says, and they picked up stones to stone him, but then Jesus slipped away. So as Jesus slipped away, as he passed by, that means Jesus has gone out of the temple. People were picking up stones to stone him. As he passed by, so he's somewhere in Jerusalem still. We don't know. It's still the festival is kind of ended now, and it's the waning, but there's still people there. And so it says, as he passed by, now listen to the next words. He saw a man blind from birth. That's going to be critical. All right. Let's get into this. Get into kind of the meat of the passage. Here we go. And his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Now let's stop right there for just a second. All right. Who sinned, this man or his parents? Now look, let's be honest. That's not a question you and I are going to ask. Right? That you're not going to ask that question. That's not a question I've been asked a lot of questions in ministry. This is one I've never been asked. Right? Because in our minds, that's not anything we would be concerned about. But blindness and sin there was a lot. I mean, sin's visible today. Blindness is visible today. But in the world of Jesus, blindness was a very common occurrence. There were very little treatments for eye diseases at all. And think about this. It's dirty, dusty, and sanitation is not what it is today. So eye issues were very common. That's why you see so many healings of Jesus relating to blindness. All right, we'll talk more about that. But what this question does reveal to us, it reveals to us a sentiment or a belief that the Jews had, or at least the disciples had, and they're trying to work out in their own mind. Because they're asking the question, hey, we realize this guy's blind. Something must have happened. Their rationale is, something must have happened for this guy to be born blind. The rationale is, there's only 2 conclusions. Either his parents sinned, and he's receiving the punishment. Punishment is being passed down hereditarily, if that's a word. Or the baby sinned in utero. Because if your worldview is that sin equals physical suffering, and the guy's been blind from birth, what options do you have? in utero sin, or he's getting the punishment for something his parents did, hereditary. So he's either, the options are either hereditary punishment or in utero sin. Now that seems crazy today, but that's not our worldview. Their worldview is, this is the language of what's going on. In fact, one commentary I read this week said one of the famous rabbis, that was basically his conclusion, was either it was because your parents or grandparents or great-grandparents did something, or you did something as an infant or in utero. And so the disciples are trying to like figure this out. And so they ask Jesus, hey, like, we see this guy's been blind from birth. Like, what's the deal? Is it his parents or him? Now, Jesus is going to answer. Now, here's what we're going to do in verse 3. So we're going to read it, but we're going to stop after the first phrase that Jesus says. We're going to talk about that. Then we're going to get to the but. Okay, so we're going to stop. We're going to stop halfway through. Here we go. Jesus answered. So they passed by the man. The disciples asked the question. Here's what Jesus answered. It was not this that this man sinned or his parents. So immediately, right off the bat, Jesus says, you need to forget, you need to wipe out of your mind that this guy is blind because his parents sinned or he sinned in the womb. Just take that away from your mind. Like, neither of those options are correct. Neither of them are. Okay? Now, the part that's after the but is going to give us pause. All right? So we're going to read it, then we're going to talk about it. But that the works of God, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. Now, let me just pause. Now, I've taught y'all, you could also, some of your translations may say, so that the works of God. All right, now remember, I've taught y'all, I've said this over and over, if you hadn't heard it today, if you hadn't heard it yet, you're going to hear it today. Whenever you're reading your Bible, especially in the New Testament, and you read, comma, so that, or in this case, but that, you are about to read a statement of purpose. You are about to read a statement of purpose. Okay? Here's the problem for us as English speakers. The way this is written in the original language, the so that, the purpose, can either be placed with the top part of verse 3 or actually verse 4. Because remember, we talked about this last week. Miss Lynn, where's Miss Lynn at? Miss Lynn, on Wednesday, asked a very simple, well, y'all should really come to Bible study on Wednesday. Man, we have a great time. Miss Lynn asked a simple question. I don't remember. She asked, who named the books of the Bible? And me and Adam gave her a 15-minute conversation about the Greek text of the Bible. And she was like, that's not even what I asked about. And she gained so much more information than she even knew she didn't know. Okay? But one of the things, here, listen, one of the things that you have to realize is, Greek language and English language are structured very differently. Okay? For one, when Paul or when John wrote this letter, he wrote it in all capitals with no spaces between the words. Think about that for a minute. No spaces between the words and very little punctuation. So you say, well, Pastor, how do we get to this? Because this is, we're not reading it in Greek, are we? What are we reading in? English. And in English, we have much more punctuation for things. We have commas. Very few commas in Greek. Ever. Especially in these, like what Paul, John, and the earliest even copies of are. And so what we have to do is, pastors and commentary authors and Bible scholars, is you have to delineate, okay, this is all the words in the verse, but how does that verse make sense in English? And let me throw you another curveball, because every sentence you've ever written in English has a subject, a verb, and a predicate. Now, you may throw some other, you know, things in there to spice it up. You may throw adjectives in or some adverbs. You may do an appositive. That's, you know, like where you can take that whole phrase out of the sentence and the sentence still makes sense. Guess what, in Greek? They can put them words in any order they want to. Word order doesn't matter a thing. You can have a subject of the sentence. No joke. Subject of the sentence can be the last word of the sentence. And the verb can be first, even though it goes in the middle. Because Greek places importance on what is important comes first, not subject, verb, predicate. So you say, well, okay, what's all that mean for this? Here's what that means for this. Every commentator I read said we should read it in English. We should read verse 3 and 4 in English this way. It was not that this man sinned or his parents, period, but that the works of God might be displayed in him, comma, verse 4, we must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. You hear the difference? Because, see, if we leave it at the beginning, what does it make God out to be? A capricious, fickle God who said, you know what, I'm going to create this young man, and I'm going to make him blind from birth, and he's going to stumble through life and be miserable so that one day I might do something cool with him and everybody will go, ooh. But that's not the God of the Bible that we read. God is never a fickle, capricious. Now look, he's omniscient, he's omnipotent, and he's sovereign. And look, God is God, and he can do, and he will do what he desires. He will bring about, but he is not capricious or fickle or irritable like the gods of the Greco-Roman pantheon. And so what Jesus is saying is that exact point. So the way we would write this sentence, if John was an English speaker, here's how he'd write it. He'd even write it a little bit differently, because we would write the purpose sentence at the end. Here's how we would write it. This is verse 3 and 4. All right. Here's how we write it. It is not that this man sinned nor his parents, period. We must work the works of him who sent me, comma, so that, purpose statement, so that the works of God might be displayed in him. That's how you and I would write that. Now, John doesn't write it that way because he ain't you and I. And he's writing in a different language with a different language, literary structure and all that. So he don't write. He said, why do you write like we write? Because he's not me and you. Right? And some of us would throw a couple of little, redneck phrases here and there. Southernism. So what is this? What is Jesus trying to say? Listen, Jesus is trying to tell us this man's blindness, will one day lead to a divine work in his life. It absolutely will lead to a divine work in his life. So what Jesus is saying is that Jesus and the disciples must continue in God's work so that they can bring about healing and restoration in this guy's life to show God's glory to him and through him. Now listen, one commentator put it this way. God overruled the disaster of the child's blindness so that when the child grew up to manhood, he might, by recovering his sight, personally see the glory of God in the face of Christ, and others seeing this work of God might turn to the true light of the world. Alright, let's wrap it all up. Gotta go cover it. Jesus is not saying that God is capricious or fickle and created this guy so that he can languish in blindness so that one day he might be healed. He is saying that this guy is blind and it's not because of sin, that in this case sin doesn't equal suffering. His parents' sin is not passed down to the kids. He didn't sin in utero. It's just the way it is, born blind. But his blindness would one day lead to everyone, himself included, literally seeing a divine miracle take place so that he might see God's work in his own life and so that other people might see God's work in his life. Right? See, something here, hey, look, Holly, I was reading a little bit of the women's Bible study. So I was tired, and I was like, I want to do it. And one of the things that the lady talked about in the latest Bible study was how a lot of times we run away from the desert moments of our life. And she said in the Jewish mind, they run to them. And then instead of, they ask, what can I learn in the desert? And we say, how long is it going to take you to get out of the desert? Come on now. A lot of times we see disaster in our life in the same context. How quick can I get out of this disaster? Like, how quick can I run away from this? And sometimes it's that, what is God trying to teach me in the disaster? And what is God trying to show others through me in the disaster? Right? And that's what Jesus is saying. The other thing that Jesus is clearly giving the disciples, and we're going to talk about this more in a minute, is that we must continue to do God's work while we have the ability and the time, so that we can bring about God's work in other people's lives, so that they can then see the light and be drawn to the light of Jesus Christ. All right? So now, that's kind of the gist of what Jesus says. Verse 5 is really simple. Verse 6 and 7 are really simple. Jesus makes some, he spits in the ground, gets some mud, puts it over the guy's eyes, says, go wash in the pool of Siloam. Now, if you remember, the pool of Siloam is where they draw the water for the water ceremony during the festival of booths. So he goes and he jumps in the pool, does whatever, it's deep water, jumps in, comes up, and all of a sudden, it says, so he went and washed and came back seeing. You're like, but wait, that's like anticlimactic. Like, there's this great miracle. This guy, as far as I know, Adam can correct me at the end of service. As far as I know, this is the only miracle that Jesus does, that are in the entire, let me rephrase that, the only miracle that I know of in the Bible where somebody is blind from birth and they're healed. Now, there's other things that people have from birth that Jesus healed. This is the only one. And look, in antiquity, stories of blindness, blind from birth people being healed, so Jesus heals the guy and he comes back up. Now, verses 8 through 34, I'm going to summarize really quickly because it is a bunch of back and forth. So the guy comes up out of the water. He's like, you can imagine the scene. I can see, you know, all this kind of stuff. So then discussion is the discussion becomes between the people are at the pool and people he knew asking if he was really the guy who was been blind from birth, who they knew as the who sat on the ground asking for money. Because that's what it's all you can do as a blind person. Like, you know, you ask for alms and that pays for your whatever little bit of stuff you have here. And so they argue and argue with the now healed man, now the non-blind guy, now the healed guy, if he was really the one who was blind to begin with. And he's like, yes, Jesus, who healed you? Jesus healed me. Here's what he did. Mud, water, came up, seeing. And they're like, you need to go talk to the Pharisees. So they drag the guy to the Pharisees. Go to the Pharisees. They get to the Pharisees. The Pharisees have all these questions. Might add, in verse 14, we realize that Jesus does the miracle on the Sabbath day again. And so the Pharisees lose their mind because it's on Sunday. And supposedly this is like work on Sunday or Saturday. And so it's the Sabbath day. So they're like, this can't be the guy. You weren't really blind. So then they call the guy's parents in. It's like a soap opera. You should really read this. So they call his parents in. Now, his parents are scared of the religious leaders, so they don't want to say anything too much. So they basically tell the religious leaders, hey, look, we don't know what happened. He's old enough. Go ask him. But I can tell you, he was blind, and now he sees. And they're like, ugh. So the religious leaders find the man again. They say, come back over. We've got to ask you again. And they're like, tell us again. He's like, I done told y'all. Why didn't you listen to me? That's the Travis version of that. Like, I done told y'all. Like, y'all ain't listening to me. Right? We say that often at our house. So they ask him again, and they're like, surely, you know, we know that this man, speaking of Jesus, he's not from God, blah, blah, blah. And here's the man's final words to the religious officials. I love him, love him, love him. He said, why is this an amazing thing? You do not know where he comes from, because that was me. Now, we don't know where Jesus comes from. And yet, he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. In other words, he's saying, I don't know of a story, and I know you don't know of a story. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. It's shocking to me that a blind man with no education has more education than the educated people with all the education. And guess what happens? They listen. I mean, I don't know if y'all do this, and again, you got to be careful doing this, but I imagine this scene at this point going something like this. The guy gets out of the word, out of his mouth, if this man were not from God, and I'm saying, he did nothing, and I imagine that the Pharisees were just, carotid arteries starting to bulge out, faces red, they're shaking, because what do they say after? Basically, you're uneducated, and you're going to teach us. And they throw him out. They're basically like, get out of our sight. We don't want to see you anymore. And they kick him out. Right? So word spreads. I mean, can you imagine? Word spreads that a man born blind was healed. He went to the Pharisees, and the Pharisees kicked him out. So the buzz around town is there's a blind man who was not blind anymore. He got kicked out by the Pharisees. Jesus finally finds the now healed man, the former blind man, and here's the conversation. Jesus heard that they had cast him out. And having found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? Do you believe in me? He answered, and who is he, sir, that I may believe? Verse 37. Jesus said to him, you have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you. So it's like, it's me. And in verse 38, he gives the only appropriate response. Lord, I believe. And he worshiped. So the guy says, if you're him, I believe in you, and he worshiped you. Verse 39, here's how the story begins. Jesus said, for judgment I came into this world, that those who don't see may see, and those who see may become blind. Now, verse 40, some of the Pharisees near him heard these things, and said to him, are we also blind? And Jesus said to him, if you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now you say, you see, your guilt remains. In other words, you say you see, but you don't really see. Because if you saw, you would know that this guy was blind, and I just came to this life blind from birth. And that's how the story ends. And that's how the chapter 9 ends. And so really throughout this entire chapter, we learned three things. These are kind of our points of application today. So we learned three things. We learned something about Jesus. We learned something about sin and suffering. And we learned something about some questions we should ask ourselves. So here's what we learned about Jesus. We've seen Jesus do a lot. Now, over the last month to 6 weeks, we interacted with Jesus mainly. We've seen him in question and answer mode and doing and saying some amazing things. But for about a month to 6 weeks, we haven't seen Jesus do a miracle. But then in verse chapter 9, we are thrust right back into Jesus' miracle working power, even over disease that nobody would have thought could have been. Jesus with spit and dirt heals the guy who'd been blind from birth, right? And so we see that Jesus has enormous power and enormous strength over things that in his culture were seen as life-ending or life-altering. So we see that Jesus has amazing power. He has amazing ability to do things that nobody else can. Here's the second thing that we see in this passage. We see the relationship between sin and suffering. Now, let me be clear, okay? Listen to me real carefully. Sin always has consequences. Okay? Listen to me. Sin, I'll say it again, sin always has consequences. Okay? So, don't walk out of here saying, oh, Jesus said sin. I can do whatever I want. That's not what Jesus said. Sin always has consequences. Sin can lead to physical issues. Let me give you the Old Testament story. Moses' brother and sister, Aaron and Miriam, you can go read about it in Exodus, are talking ugly and they're being mean and denigrating opposes his leadership and his ability. And God strikes him with a physical disease, leprosy. Now they're healed. But for a moment, they've got leprosy, which in that time meant you could no longer be a part of the community. Literally, you had to go outside the camp. So you were either healed, or if you stayed that way, you could travel with us, but you can't come near us. So, sin always has consequences. Sin can have physical consequences. But what Jesus shows us here today is that we should not assume that when somebody gets sick, somebody gets healed, that it's because of sin in their life. Now, we don't do this necessarily. We do it. I'll tell you how we do it in a second. We do the opposite more than we do this. Because, see, there's a version, I hate to even say a version of the gospel, because it's not the gospel. But there's a version of Christianity that takes the opposite approach, and it's health, wealth, and prosperity. And that says, well, you don't have monetary, you don't have money, wealth, fame, fortune, and good health because you don't have enough faith. Right? That's the same thing as what Jesus... See, we're equating this side, that kind of theology is equating, if I have enough faith, God will bless me materialistically. Our story today is in the same vein, and it says, if you sin, God's going to punish you physically. And Jesus says, those two things are not automatically related. Right? So what do we learn about sin and suffering? Sin can absolutely cause devastating effects in your life. They may be physical. But we should not assume that when somebody gets sick, they've got some unconfessed sin in their life that we just don't know about. Nor should we think of ourselves, God is punishing me with blank because I did blank. Which is probably, honestly, what we individually do more in our own lives. Right? So this week, if you get a cold, go to the doctor. Get medicine. Right? But I don't want you to think, your first thought shouldn't be, what did I do last week? God's punishing me for this bronchitis this week. It might be because it's just bronchitis and you got that allergy and this pollen. Right? Now look, I personally know a guy. Like y'all, right? But no, like I had a guy previous church years ago who was in some devastatingly horrific sin. Every week he kept telling me how he's having a stomach issue. 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 Doctors couldn't find anything wrong. Nothing. Then he come clean about his horrific sin in his life. Guess what happened? Stomach issue. Can you imagine? Right? But you record it. But my first thought shouldn't be, hey, bud, I know you've got some unconfessed sin in your life because you've got stomach issues. It's not. Because if I'm honest, what did we talk about last week? What does Jesus say in Matthew 7? I need to worry about that log in my own eye, or I worry about the speck in that other person's eye. And so Jesus says that we've got to be careful how we relate sin and suffering, and I would say in our day, blessing and righteousness and material blessing. Material blessing and righteousness and how we relate those two things together. Here's the last thing, really quickly, and then we'll move on. We learn some things about ourselves. And specifically, we learn these things through some questions we should ask ourselves. And really, there's three questions that come out of this passage that we should be asking ourselves. This is really kind of your walk-home challenge today as we get out of here. And here's the three questions. Number one. We should be asking ourselves, are we doing the works of God? Because what did Jesus say? So that, like, we must be doing the works of God so that the work of God can be displayed in Him. That's what He tells the disciples. And so the idea is, we are God's vessels, we are God's conduit, we are God's people on earth, working for Him. And so if we're not doing the works of God at our home, at our job, on the ball field, wherever we go, at Walmart, they're not doing the works of God, who's going to do them? Who is going to do them? Nobody. We can't. The government sure ain't going to do them. People who aren't Christ followers sure aren't going to do them. It's our responsibility to do the works of God wherever we are so that God, people might see God work in their own life and other people might see God work in their life. Here's the second thing we should ask ourselves. Are we sharing our story? I'd encourage you this week at some point, go back and read verses 8 through 34 of this passage. Because over and over and over again, this now guy who was blind, who got healed, consistently does one thing throughout his entire 27 verses. He shares his story. He says, I was blind, Jesus made me see. I don't know why you can't get it, but I was blind, Jesus made me see. If you're scared to share your story, and look, I know it can be overwhelming, but look, people want to hear your story. They do. They don't know that, but they do, I promise you. They want to hear your story. And really, how you shared your story really quickly, I was this, Jesus changed my life, here's what he's doing in my life. It's really simple. 2 minutes. You've got to be another 10-minute thesis. 2 minutes. I was this, Jesus changed my life, here's what he's doing now. That's exactly what they got. You've got to share your story. Alright, here's the last thing. And this is a challenging question. Because there's a lot of varying descriptions about who Jesus is today. You can't walk away from this passage without asking yourself this question. Are we seeing Jesus clearly? There's a lot of variety on who Jesus is and what he's doing in the world today. There's a lot of variety in churches about who Jesus is, unfortunately. Jesus is plain and simple on who he is. He's building this case for himself throughout John that he's the Son of God who's on a mission to save the world by going to the cross. Right? And we have to see Jesus clearly in our own personal lives so that we can show the world who Jesus really is. He's not an ogre, that he's not a fickle person. Person with a lightning bolt up in the sky, but he's the Savior who willingly came to earth to die for us, to rescue us from our sin and the sin of our family and our friends and the whole world. So we've got to see Jesus clearly, because the reality is we're either going to see Jesus like the religious leader saw Jesus, or we're going to see Jesus like the man who was healed saw Jesus. And look, if I could help that personally, I would. But you got to, that's on you. Just like it's on you for me, how I see Jesus. So let me encourage you, you need to see Jesus. Alright, so that's your three challenges. Are you doing the works of God? Are you sharing your story? And are you seeing Jesus? Alright, Adam's going to come up. The truth is going to come up. We're going to go into our hymn, our time of response. I'm going to pray, and then we'll get you to stand up, and you can respond to this. Pray. Lord, thank you so much for this day. Thank you for all your grace, mercy, goodness, kindness to us, Lord, and for all that you do for us each and every day. Lord, we love you and praise you for who you are. We thank you for all that you are doing. Lord, we just want to give you glory today for allowing us to be able to be here, Lord, for sharing, for having this story specifically in your Bible, Lord, so that we might learn from it, we might grow from it, Lord, people might see Jesus in us through what we've learned here today as we go out in the world. And Lord, I pray that we would share our story.